Welcome to the Issue Is podcast as we continue this era of coronavirus. Joining us this week is Andrew Yang, who we got to know pretty well during the campaign. The Yang gang has been pretty good to us. Talked to him a bunch. He's in the news a lot, had this PSA that was seen by like 5-6 million people about Asian discrimination. Also, of course, his idea, UBI, back in the news so much this week. Also, we have Christy Smith, who's running in a congressional race, which is on right now, special election May 12th, but it's vote by mail. She's got a virtually campaign. It's sort of unlike anything we've seen before and could be a preview of what all the candidates could be doing going forward. Also with us this week, Michael Gervais, who is a psychologist who was with us towards the beginning of the pandemic. We're checking in back with him to sort of talk about mental health. And I was surprised at the end of this episode, which I wasn't expecting. This is our two-year anniversary episode. So, we begin, though, with Andrew Yang on the coronavirus.
Should Americans start getting recurring checks from the government? That's an idea our next guest has been advocating for a long time. Joining us now via Skype is Andrew Yang, the former Democratic presidential candidate who's been in the news a lot lately. Andrew Yang, welcome back to The Issue Is.
It's great to be here. I wish the circumstances were better, but it's good to see you, Alex. You're looking good.
Thank you very much. You're looking good, too. We like your quarantine hair. let's talk for a moment, though, about that big issue of unemployment. So many folks out of work right now. You're president. You're in charge of the government. How do we fix this?
The first thing we need to do is put money into people's hands so we can weather this crisis. And the stimulus checks that already went out, they didn't reach many, many Americans. They're not enough. They essentially helped pay last month's bills, and this month's bills and next month's bills are right around the corner. So we have to put $2,000 a month into everyone's hands for the duration of the crisis. And there are dozens of members of Congress who have now come forward and said this is the step we should take, because that money doesn't disappear, Alex. It goes right back into our local economies, into groceries, rent, fuel, and things that help keep our communities, frankly, functioning. Because right now, 30 million unemployed actually understates the extent of the economic harm that our communities are experiencing.
Is there part of you that says, when it comes to universal basic income, I told you so? Because there are a lot of people that are now talking about this concept that were essentially laughing at you when you brought it up a few months ago.
Alex, what I said is that we should make this move because of the rate of change. And unfortunately, the crisis has accelerated the rate of change, where we're experiencing 10 years of automation and displacement in 10 weeks. So I'm thrilled that my campaign helped advance universal basic income right before this crisis, because we need it now more than ever.
You know, one of the criticisms even before this of universal basic income is that it's a disincentive for work, that people, if they're getting a check from the government, why would they keep working or going about other sorts of jobs? What do you say to that?
Millions of Americans just got that stimulus check, and I'm sure they felt the same thing we all feel, which is a sense of relief, more security in the future. They can breathe a little easier, but it doesn't make them lazy or not want to work. You know, the fact is, you know, we're inside because we know that's the right thing to do for our health and our community's health. Experience just shows how ridiculous it is that putting money into our hands somehow weakens our work ethic. It does not.
What do you say about the sort of broader societal questions about purpose that come from this? Because even after this crisis of the pandemic, there's still going to be a lot of people that are unemployed because of the economic aftershocks of all of this. And for folks that lose their job, how do you deal with that aspect of it, the loss of purpose?
I couldn't agree more. That is the central problem. And our economy will not snap back into place like a rubber band. Millions of these jobs that have been lost will not return. So we need to do everything we can to help give millions of Americans a path forward. That includes putting money into our hands, but that also includes job creation measures, big and small. We should be supercharging nonprofits, small businesses, state governments, schools, hospitals, anyone that needs a hand. We're short hundreds of thousands of trained healthcare workers to do contact tracing to help combat the pandemic. We need to be investing in job creation measures at every level, particularly starting at the federal level.
Do you see any realistic political path for universal basic income in the short term? Do you see Republicans getting behind that idea?
I do, because many Republicans are stepping forward saying putting cash into Americans' hands is a good idea. The stimulus checks that went out were nearly unanimous. The fact is, Republicans love businesses that help create jobs, and we can all see that right now we're all being sent home and we're losing jobs through no fault of any business owner or individual. So this is going to be bipartisan. Universal basic income, I believe, will be front and center, and I think it's going to pass this year.
Another issue that you're talking about this week, you put out a PSA about discrimination in the Asian American community. It's been seen by millions. Here's part of it.
We don't have the virus more than anyone else.
And all Americans are susceptible.
Every one of us, no matter who we are.
And we know it's disproportionately affecting African Americans, as well as all of our underserved communities.
So lose the bigotry, ignorance,
finger pointing, and assaults.
We're all in this together.
And we will rise out of this.
So what's your sort of bottom line point in this? And what's the reaction to this been like for you?
Well, the reaction's been tremendous because everyone knows that we're in this together, that there's no particular group that's somehow more responsible for this virus, particularly Asian Americans who are a world away from the origin and a world away from the Chinese government decisions that unfortunately helped make this crisis worse. So I was thrilled to have the help of so many people who stepped forward and said, we need to say that we're all Americans, we're all in this together, and that racism is the last thing that we need right now in this time of crisis.
Do you think the Trump administration has perpetuated that?
I think it's actually the Republican strategy to try and frame the virus as a foreign effort, say this is the China virus, because it helps distract from their mishandling of the pandemic. And you don't need to take my word for it. That's actually in a memo that's being distributed. So we have to hold them accountable for the fact that, yes, this was a natural phenomenon that experts have been warning about for years. And trying to, frankly, throw Asian Americans under the bus just serves to separate us from each other rather than bring us together.
As one of the country's top Asian American leaders, what's your message to Asian Americans that feel persecuted against right now, that feel discriminated against and feel hurt?
It's a heartbreaking time for many Asian Americans. I know people who are afraid to leave their homes. What I would say is that we are just as American as anyone else. And if we have the capacity to help get our country through this crisis, we should act because everything we do in this time is going to be magnified.
All right, we want to pause for a moment and have a little bit of fun, too. You know, we like to play music on this show. And one of the things we learned about you from your YouTube channel, you're a piano player. Let's listen to some of that. I found this on your YouTube channel. Very nice, Andrew Yang.
Well, I'm in quarantine, and you know, you have no choice but to try and keep yourself busy and stable.
Well, so I've never been to a political event quite like this before.
He's just as good looking in real life.
That's some of the fun we had with then presidential candidate Andrew Yang out on the campaign trail. He joins us now via Skype. I got to give a shout out to the Yang gang because they've been very good to me in Twitter, say of all the groups. So thank you for your supporters being so kind.
You deserve it, man. You gave us like a spotlight when others would not. So thank you, Alex.
We appreciate that. And let's talk a moment about the campaign. Now that you're on the other side of it, your own campaign, what were some of the most important lesson that you learned about yourself from the experience and the most important lesson you learned about this country from the experience?
Well, what I learned about myself is that I am a very, very fortunate husband because my wife was a rock star throughout the entire campaign. I was away for the better part of 2 years. I told people that I had two goals. One is to eradicate poverty, and number two is to stay married. And thanks to Evelyn, out number two. So thank you, Evelyn. Appreciate the heck out of you. On the country's side, I learned that Americans want the same thing that we all want. They just want a future that they can be excited about for themselves and their families, that we're still a very, very good, generous, open-minded country. My campaign was the challenge and journey of my life, but I loved it. And I met so many tremendous people that I still miss, particularly people who came out for my campaign when I was this underdog and scrappy and, you know, people were not giving me much of a shot. So thank you, Yang Gang, because thanks to you all, we helped advance solutions that our country needed right as this crisis hit.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of came out of nowhere for a lot of people. You have this huge online apparatus now. So where do you go from here? What's next for you?
Well, we're continuing to present our vision for the country. I just launched a podcast, Yang Speaks, this week that was top 10 upon its launch. I'm working on getting money into people's hands through my organization, Humanity Forward. We've distributed 1.4 million and counting. I'm part of Project 100 that is putting 100 million into 100,000 different families' hands in the next 100 days, and we're more than halfway towards that fundraising goal. There's the All Americans campaign saying that we're all in this together and that Asian Americans are as American as anyone else. So I'm staying very busy, and it's in part because this is such a difficult time for our country. Anyone who has the capacity to lend a hand really should, and I feel like I'm in that group. I'm also in touch with the Joe Biden campaign trying to help him defeat Donald Trump in the fall.
And just on that front, how should he campaign in this virtual world? This is something you were so sort of strong at, this idea of using technology. Maybe it's a little more foreign to him. What would your advice be on how to campaign right now?
Well, his team is very savvy. They're having me on their podcast, so that's a good start. I'll be up there this week. But I think that this is going to be a team effort. I think that Joe's campaign is going to rely upon surrogates to reach out to younger people and people who are native online. And we need to have all hands on deck to defeat Donald Trump in the fall. This is not going to be an easy race.
One other note on the presidential thing, you are suing New York, at least the election board, because they canceled the Democratic primary in that state. What's your bottom line point? Because their point is, look, we basically have a Democratic nominee. Why are we going to put people's safety in jeopardy, have people go to the polls right now?
Well, they're not canceling other elections, and there is vote by mail. So certainly we have the capacity to have this primary. And to me, we need to let people vote. Where you had some of my volunteers spend hundreds of hours gathering signatures to get us on the ballot, other states who have been in this position have just let the primaries go. For New York to not delay but to cancel its primary altogether is unheard of. Like, who's ever heard of that? Just be like, yeah, we're not going to do it this time. So there are ways to make sure that people can vote by mail remotely. Other states have done it. That's what New York should do instead of just saying, well, can't handle it. Because this is a terrible precedent. If you have states just saying, well, we shouldn't have elections because, like, we can't figure out vote by mail, then what's that going to mean nationwide throughout this entire year?
And California doing an all vote by mail election in the next couple weeks. One of the candidates in that is actually our guest in our next segment. So we'll talk more about that issue coming up. In terms of New York, though, there's a lot of rumors that you might run for mayor of New York. Is that something you're thinking about?
Well, we just want to try and solve problems. Certainly, there are enough problems, unfortunately, to go around. But it's very flattering to be thought of in that way. I am attracted more to executive roles because I think you can roll your sleeves up and get more done.
But if you were asked to be in the cabinet, would you think about that, too?
That qualifies as an executive role. Usually, like running an agency in many cases.
And just to wrap things up on a fun note, quarantine life, that's different for everybody. What's quarantine life like for you, especially with two young kids? What are you watching? Anything you're binging these days?
I did watch Tiger King. I felt like, you know, you have to do that to understand what the heck is going on in our pop culture. I just appreciate teachers every single day because I have two young boys, 7 and 4, and they are a handful. And hats off to the people that educate our kids every day, daycare workers, pretty much anyone who's making our kids stronger, because it's so much work. And it's another reason why I'm so grateful to have Evelyn as my wife and rock of the family, because she's doing it all right now. Not at all. I mean, I'm doing what I can to help. Don't get me wrong, but you know what I mean.
I'm sensing one of the strong ways that you do stay married is that you give lots of shout outs to your wife. So you got to appreciate that. A strong man who has a strong woman by his side driving the bus. Thank you very much, Andrew Yang. part of an ad for Democratic Assemblywoman Christy Smith. She is running for Congress right now in California's 25th district. She's running against Mike Garcia, former Navy fighter pilot and executive at Raytheon. Polls show that this race is close. They're running to replace Katie Hill, who resigned from that seat after a scandal. Election day is technically May 12th, but the election is almost completely vote by mail due to the coronavirus. Joining us now is Assemblywoman Christy Smith. Thanks so much. Welcome to The Issue Is for the first time.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
Let's talk more about running in the time of coronavirus in a second, because you're sort of a guinea pig for what the rest of the state is going to be doing. But first, because every race is a contrast, the most important differential between you and Mike Garcia.
Yeah, well, the differences, I think, are pretty stark and in this moment really important. First of all, I'm the person running with the most actual government experience. And I think if ever there was a time that proves that we need our government institutions to be standing up and working on behalf of the American people and on behalf of Californians, that moment is now. And I've been doing that work for 9 years. Another key contrast is on healthcare. I'm someone who has been advocating all of my career in public service that we need greater access to healthcare, both in our infrastructure as well as coverage. So I support coverage for everyone. And I think this pandemic points to the many reasons why. The disparity in recovery and how some communities are being impacted by this directly translate to people not having coverage year-round to have good health care. And then third, you know, the contrast on how we're both approaching this race. I'm really leaning in, discussing issues heavily, wanting the community to know that I'm here for them, that I do want to make sure that we're providing all the supports and all of the, you know, economic support that they're going to need to continue to deal with this crisis. And we're just not hearing a lot of that from my opponent.
Well, and I should say a note regarding Mike Garcia. We wanted to bring him, have his point of view on the show. We invited him to be a part of our show for several weeks, either in debate format or one-on-one. We offered him to do a Zoom from his time and place that worked for him. His team said that he didn't have any time in his schedule to do anything with us. So that's why we're not hearing his point of view for this. But this race has really become sort of a national proxy fight. You got Donald Trump, the president, endorsing Garcia. This week you have Hillary Clinton endorsing you because this is the big race happening right now in the country.
Right.
Sort of what do you think is the biggest difference in terms of the coronavirus and how it should be dealt with? What do you think is the most important thing Congress can do when it comes to dealing with this extraordinary pandemic?
Well, we know that Congress is going to continue to need to pass economic supports for the business community, for individuals. But the other thing that I want to see Congress do next is also focus on what more we can do from the legislative perspective about getting a national testing regime and a public health system in place in order for us to do the kind of healthcare infrastructure we're going to need to get our economy back on track. And that means a testing system where everybody can get tested, that we've got protocols for how often people need to be tested until we have those serology, those antibody tests in place for everybody and or a vaccine. And then what does the public health support look like that allows us to do really good, really comprehensive contact tracing to shut down areas of hotspots as soon as they start to happen so that we don't have to shut down the whole economy again once we do start getting up and going. And literally, you know, so many of these conversations we're having outside of that right now are moot. I mean, we can talk about what a safe work environment is going to look like, but we can't get there until we're getting everybody tested. So here in California, we've been moving the needle on that pretty quickly, but it's going to take reliance on a national supply chain that's just not happening. And so that's where I want to see the federal government step up and add some additional layers of support, in addition to continuing helping people with support on the financial end, because a lot of us know that Californians are hurting, Americans are hurting with this extended period of joblessness.
You're also a member of the Assembly. Do you think the governor's overreaching on the issue of beaches?
Well, you know, I was personally unhappy about what we saw in Orange County beaches because it was contrary to what, you know, I was hearing here in Los Angeles County. I'm going to leave that decision to the governor. But again, you know, a lot of these conversations are moot until we really have a clear picture through testing and through data protocols of what's safe and what's not safe. And so, you know, I don't want to be putting all of our eggs in one basket, because what we really need right now is the science and data to help us and our public officials make these decisions.
Let's talk about this campaign itself. You are campaigning virtually. He's campaigning virtually. We've never really seen anything like this before. What's it like being a candidate in the time of coronavirus?
Well, you know, two interesting perspectives. One, I'm a candidate who likes to be out there doing the town halls and shaking hands. So in this moment for me, I would love to be doing that, but I can't. But then the other thing is that what I'm so grateful for is that my campaign and my volunteers have embraced this moment, not only from the perspective of how we can do this to win this race, but how we can reach out to people in our community who have been staying safe at home in place for quite some time and may need access to really important resources. So we've got that available to them when our callers call about the election. We're also connecting people with where their nearest food bank is or what the domestic violence hotlines are. And so, you know, we're seeing this as a challenge, but as an opportunity to be a supportive part of the community as well.
All right. Well, you know, we like to play music on this show. I don't know if you're a Parks and Recs fan or not.
I occasionally get compared to Leslie Knope, so I guess so.
Okay. Is our next guest will hopefully make you feel a little better. Dr. Michael Gervais, one of the country's top mental health experts. He's a high-performance psychologist. He co-founded a company called Compete to Create with Seattle Seahawks coach Pete Carroll, and he hosts a podcast called Finding Mastery. Dr. Gervais, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Thank you for having me.
You've been one of the most calming forces I've seen anywhere on this issue, so I wanted to bring you back. We talked to you at the beginning of this process. A lot has changed in a month or so. Where do you think the national psyche is right now?
We're ready. We are flat out ready to be able to hug people, to be able to spend time with people. We are recalibrating the importance of humanity and relationships. And we're also recalibrating and reimagining autonomy and what it means to be able to govern oneself and to do so in a way that takes care of others. This is a massive moment for us, and I don't want to lose the gravity of how important this moment is for humanity.
So what's your most important advice in this moment?
Yeah, is that what we know from those organizations that, and I'm talking about sport right now, that are able to endure and able to stay and sustain on the world stage, that relationships matter. And it's, yes, there's outcomes are involved, and yes, there's uncertainty involved in elite sport. And athletes and coaches in elite sport are very skilled at managing uncertainty. And so it's the relationships with each other that allows us to know that we can go the distance together. We're seeing that right now. And we're trying to figure it out. As a global community, we're trying to figure it out. And we're recalibrating that, hey, you know what? Relationships matter, and the relationships with our loved ones begins with our relationship with ourselves. And to invest in oneself is the opportunity right now to say, okay, who am I? And how do I want to be as I move through these phases of uncertainty? And it's an ancient question that all of us have the opportunity to explore. And then the second part is, what are the skills to help manage stress? Exhaling. Long exhales is an ancient signal to our brain that says, hey, we can relax right now. In this moment, we're safe. And so those two factors, self-discovery and the skills to be able to find a sense of calm in any particular environment, are paying massive dividends for people.
You're joining us from one of California's fine beach cities. One of the big stories locally this week was the closure of beaches in Orange County. What is the sort of symbolic importance of the beach to the Californians?
What the beach represents is freedom. It represents space. It represents relaxation. It represents the best parts of California. So as an emblem for all of those, not being able to participate in that is hard. Now, that being said, not everybody lives on the coast. And so, but it is an emblem for freedom and space and autonomy. And to have the constriction on that has been challenging. And so, but you know what? The challenges are okay, because we're trying to retool, reimagine, recalibrate how to have freedom and what that really means. And it's not going somewhere, it's being you in any environment. That's the ultimate freedom. And this experience is helping us triple down on what it means to be free, even in the confines of one's home.
And let's talk about another thing that's happening right now, which is we're not having graduations and proms, which we would be having in this season. And kids have now been told, it's just not going to happen. How psychologically should kids and parents deal with that reality?
I think dealing with it, you know, head up, which is like, okay, this is reality. And it's sad. So we want to address the emotions that are involved in it. We don't want to get stuck in the emotional part. We want to address them, feel them, recognize them, give our children tools to be able to manage them, which part of that is having perspective that, you know, there's a long life ahead of us, hopefully. And this is a small part of your arc of becoming who you are. And so perspective matters, addressing and feeling and accepting the emotions that come with it are really important. And it is sad. It's a loss of something that they thought was going to be special. But remember, they've never been in it before. They don't know. They don't know what they're missing. They just are missing the idea of having closure. So the second part of it is to make sure that you offer some sort of closure for your children. There is a rite of passage to honor here, and we want to create that rite of passage for them in a new creative way.
And finally, last question, for people that are struggling to find the light at the end of the tunnel, that feel like even when we come out of this, I'm going to struggle to find a job, it's going to be hard for me to dig out of this hole, what do you say to them?
Yeah, this is the hard part, right? There's the fear that sits underneath the health, and there's the fear that sits under economic opportunities. And so this is a real deal. There's no silver bullet here. Now, the silver lining is that maybe it's a time to recalibrate and say, how do I want to spend my time? Maybe you had your dream job, but what we know when we look at the data, that 23% of people working in America report job satisfaction. Now, if you flip it on its head, that's about 80% of people that are not satisfied with what they're doing, with what they were doing. Okay, so maybe now's a really important moment. When you have the opportunity to figure out what you want to do next, what opportunities present, I would suggest, highly suggest, that you find and commit to a path that engagement is something that you'll relish in. And what does engagement mean? It means your mind and your body are in the same place with the activity that you're doing. And if we can do that, life will feel more fulfilled. It will feel more valued.
Well said. I want to let people know, by the way, we put this information up on the screen. You're doing something pretty cool. This is at competetocreate.net/warriorsedge. This is a course that you often offer to our military. You're now offering to America's first responders for free, doing your part to help them through this mental health challenge. So that's something people can get at your website. So thank you for doing that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for highlighting that. We want to recognize and support and do our part to help people that are on the front line helping us. And this is a course to help them train their minds so that they can be more present, more engaged with what they're doing and live their very best life.
Well, I feel better after talking with you. I'm ready to exhale. You want to exhale together?
Yeah, absolutely. 8 seconds out. That's about a bare minimum that you want to do. So big inhale and about 8 seconds out.
I love it. Dr. Michael Gervais, thank you so much for being with us as we celebrate our 2-year anniversary here on The Issue Is.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you for being our first guest on our first show.
Honored to be here. Thanks for having me.
2 years ago, Gavin Newsom was our first guest on our first episode of The Issue Is. It's been kind of a wild ride. We've gotten to talk to the president, to presidential candidates, to pretty much every leader in California, and had lots of fun, including dancing with Gloria Allred many times along the way.
Welcome back to The Issue Is. I'm Gloria Allred, wishing Alex a very happy second anniversary of the show.
I How love are that. Are you? You're live?
I am live. I also have a little friend with me to wish you a second anniversary, happy anniversary. United States Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, right? Because we often discuss legal issues on your show. And so I know she'd want to wish you a happy anniversary as well. No, I haven't checked with her. Sorry. But if she knew you as I do, I know she'd be sending her best wishes.
I hear that RBG is a big fan. I see it in the Twitter mentions. Wow, okay, Gloria, well, that's so sweet. Gloria, of course, is our most frequent guest. She was here last year for our 1-year anniversary with a cake. And so that's so sweet of you virtually to be here as we sort of virtually blow out candles.
I'm a little upset with you, if you don't mind my saying, because I just saw you cheating on me. You were dancing with Mr. Yang there on your show. And I thought you were only going to dance with me, that I was your one and only. But now I see
we have an exclusive. We have an exclusive relationship. What'd you make of Andrew Yang's dance moves?
Okay. All right. Well, I'll have to work on it, but I promise I'll try.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe we'll dance to Tupac together as well next time. Gloria, okay, your support for this show has meant so much. You've been there with us from pretty much the start, and it really means a lot. So thank you so much. What a great surprise.
Thank you. And I'm looking forward to the third anniversary as well.
Excellent. What a great treat. Thank you to our producers that pulled that off. That was a total shock for me. I love it. Thank you, Gloria Allred.
She is. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you very much to everybody who has been watching and listening to this. Thank you for all the support over the 2 years of this journey. We really do appreciate it. It's an incredible show. Work with such a great team. And a special shout out to Debbie Kim, our editor since the beginning, who really makes all this work week in, week out. Shout outs to our producers as well. Nick Reitzer, Greg Lindsay, our original producer, Jeff Schultz, our director, Francis Bernardi, recently our director, Jeff Clark. It's a small group that puts this on, and I'm really proud to be associated with them. And a shout out to our managing editor, Pete Wilgorin, as well. All right. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week for more of The Issue Is.